You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this slightly rainy day here in Southern California. These are rare events, and so they're to be celebrated. But today we are going to be looking at one of the very interesting aspects of business today, not only in Southern California, all across the country, and maybe even around the globe. Lots of people talk about this transition from Gen Xers to Millennials. So we have with us a global expert on the Millennials, with Chip Espinosa, the Director of Organizational Development at one of our favorite universities here in Southern California, Concordia University. And Chip is the author of Managing Millennials and a couple of other books on Millennials as well. But today we're going to be focusing on what is it about Millennials that managers and business owners should know. So welcome, Chip.
Thanks, Will. Great to be on your program.
So tell us a little bit about how you got into this fascinating study of Millennials.
Well, I was teaching traditional undergraduate college students in management theory and practice. And I noticed a difference between my students in the 2000s and the students in the 90s. In the 1990s, if I handed out a syllabus, they would take it, never look at it, throw it in their backpack. In the 2000s, they would take the syllabus, take a red pen, go line by line, and have questions for things like, hey, 10 to 12 page midterm, is 10 pages a C, is 12 pages an A? Or how many classes can I miss and still get an A? And what I realized, Will, is that they came in with the idea that everything was negotiable. So the syllabus was just a starting point. And I noticed that this made some of my professor colleagues a little upset, off-put by that behavior. And I saw it differently. I saw them as wanting to come in and be engaged in the learning process and to have a voice in the way they were going to do that. And I thought, if it's happening here, when these young professionals start their careers, is it happening in corporate America?
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. In our training sessions where we train salespeople, I have noticed that the baby boomers come in for sales training, and there's a lot of resistance to changing things because we teach them something that's very different. We teach them to pay attention to the prospect rather than to try to sell them something, even if they don't want it. And so there's resistance there. On the other hand, when I was looking at our roles, I looked at all the people in our current training program, and I recognized that 80% of them were millennials. And I began to understand why they really did want to get down to the nitty-gritty of what's going on here and how can I change and how can I develop this. And before I recognized that 80% of them were millennials, I just thought these were a particularly bright group of kids who were really engaged. And now what I'm beginning to realize is they're engaged because they're millennials.
Yeah, absolutely. They come in with the expectation that they're going to have a voice. They grew up in families that consulted them on their opinion about where they want to go to school, where they want to vacation, purchases, those kinds of things. And so it is odd for them to walk into an environment that's not interested in what they have to say. And if you think about that, many of our organizations, and really the organizations that I think are at greatest risk are what I call legacy organizations, some nonprofits, where you've had this kind of mentality, the way you do things for decades, and you're not going to change. And they come in with this desire to want to be a part of what's happening. Now, here's what happens. They come in engagement ready, but we can turn them off if we don't understand that about them. They ask why a lot because they want to learn and they want to be a part of the future, not just maintain what an organization already has.
And I think that is a big difference that I hear and see in reading about these legacy organizations or organizations with management that still believes there's some sort of ladder that you climb before you have permission to speak, participate in decision-making, that somehow there's a pattern of waiting around, and right, eventually you'll be able to shape the future, maybe in the last 5 or 10 years of your career, versus right now.
Well, in the book, I refer to it as the bias of experience. which says, this is the way I did it coming up, or we did it, and it's the blueprint for the way everybody else should have to do it. So if you think about a lot of things that we do in organizations, it's really a bias of experience. Because we did it, we think others should have to do it. And I'm not so sure that that's working in today's environment. You mentioned a moment ago, 80% millennials in your training seminars. They're already the largest age cohort in the workforce, and at over 35%. By 2025, they will be projected up to 65% of the workforce. One out of five managers is a millennial already. So you can see how quickly they're taking root in organizations and how they are going to really be able to set the agenda for what we're doing in the future.
Well, for our listeners, what do you define as the millennial framework?
Well, for one thing, as you well know, in doing any reading in this, you see several different years. And that's because generational analysis is not an exact science. It's sociology. What we do is we take a year at one end and a year at the other, and then we examine in between those. In my book, I have 1983 to 2001, but you'll see people put them from 80 to 2000. Some have them born as early as 96 or is 1976. So really, if someone is listening today and says, oh man, I was born in 1982 and I want to be a millennial. Don't worry about it.
Well, now, what does that mean in contemporary age?
So anybody between really 15 and 35 right now would be the borderline on both sides. So you're looking, this may be the last freshman class in high school that are millennials. The next will be Gen Z or IY or whatever they end up with, that whatever label. And then, of course, you'll see at the top range, probably 35 years old, 36.
Okay. All right. Now, one of the things that I have been observing is that when we talk about the issues about millennials, are those really issues about millennials, or are they issues about management coming to learn how to work with millennials and to maximize the productivity of millennials?
Well, I think it's both, because one is the whole notion of a generational cohort is it was first written about in 1920s by a German sociologist called Karl Mannheim. And he was the first one to put forth a theory to say that a group of people in a similar region, similar age, going through adolescence, experiencing socioeconomic conditions, it would shape a worldview for them. So on one part, there is a sociology to this that really is about environment. I'll give you an example, a huge difference between the builder generation and the baby boomers. And it's easy. The way builders viewed money was very different from the way baby boomers viewed money. Builders grew up the Great Depression, very conservative. Early on in my career, I did conflict resolution in nonprofit organizations, and the conflict was always between builders and baby boomers, and it was about how they spent money. The builder would say, we're not building the association pool until we have the cash in hand, whereas the baby boomer would say, let's build the pool, we'll be able to raise money because people will have something to see. Two very different approaches. And so what you see generationally is that there is this sense of values, attitudes, and beliefs that are part of the sociology of just growing up. And you mentioned earlier that perhaps a global phenomenon. It is a global phenomenon. Millennials are more alike around the world than any generation before them. So it doesn't matter where you go. You can Google Moscow, you can Google China, you'll find similar comments made by managers. And it's even more accentuated in cultures like India and China, where the manager grew up maybe under socialism or communism and doesn't have these grandiose expectations about what their career is going to be or finding meaning in their work. And all of a sudden they have this generation that comes up that says, I want more and here are my expectations. They're totally caught off guard by it. So Millennials at Work, my second book, really was about helping younger workers transition into the workforce, what they needed to do. That's been printed in Chinese and in Polish because we're seeing this phenomena everywhere.
Well, thinking about social media, social marketing, digital marketing, to what degree did digital marketing shape the millennials, and to what degree did millennials shape or even create the possibility for social marketing?
Well, I think one is their comfort level with it and their understanding of it is caused the proliferation of it. But I really think this global phenomena is about everybody in the world. If you look back at what I said about Mannheim, he limited it to a geography because in the 20s, that's what it was about. Today, there really is no geographical boundary because of technology. So it means that 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old living wherever in the world is having access to the same information and watching it in real time. And so it's creating more of this global perspective. And probably a more accurate term for millennials, if you really look at it, is globals. They go into organizations understanding globalization and the need to compete and be competitive in a global environment. And so they're a fascinating generation that they understand some concepts like team, empowerment, and emotional intelligence. They come in really, like I said, plug and play with some concepts that's been difficult to get over to other generations.
Now, it seems to me, in thinking about this, that in the same way that we have a whole cohort of managers who are struggling to make the changes in themselves, and we can talk about that, at the same time, we have a whole political infrastructure that, to my way of thinking, is really on its last legs. I mean, the presidential election today will be the last baby boomer generation election of candidates.
Yes, and I think it's fascinating you would say that because I agree with you. And you can look at millennials. When I was growing up in northern New Mexico, you were called a lever Democrat or a lever Republican. You picked that party, and then you just hit one button, and it selected everybody in that party. And millennials are not that way. Oh. They may vote, and what's fascinating is President Obama's pollsters have contacted me on a few occasions when they've done polling, particularly around election time, and asked me my perspective. And so millennials, they were confused a little bit because they cooled on him in 2012, and where they felt like they had real footings with that generation in many areas, they were still off in two or three, and they were asking me what I thought about that. And here's the deal. Just because millennial will vote for you in 2008 does not guarantee they're going to vote for you in 2012, 2016. Each time, they will look and say, what is best for me in my situation right now?
And I think that's why I'm seeing that this is the last baby boomer election.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the next election will not be the choice between a Republican and a Democrat. And it's not because of the candidates themselves. It's that whole divide and the loyalty that went along with it. That's moving. We're moving away from that.
Right. And you know what? And you use the term loyalty. And I would say that perhaps other generations have been blindly loyal around some situations. Because of their access to information and understanding things, and really what is more transparent today because of media, I think they have a better idea of things that maybe previous generations didn't have.
Well, I think that the whole notion of, I mean, my wife and I just got through binge-watching House of Cards. Did you get the chance to watch
House of Cards? Everybody's raving about
it. What she said after that is, well, that demonstrates that we don't know anything about what's really going on, which is absolutely true. As a baby boomer, I made a choice between the Republicans and the Democrats, and I never wavered from that. Now, were all the candidates explicitly buying into the values that I had? No.
Right.
But there was a mindset there about believing what was going on. And as we move forward, you know, I mean, the candidates today seem to be just touching on it. They might poke at each other about it, but the reality is there's a lot more transparency in the marketplace than there was 20 years ago.
Right.
And so, to me, the next election is going to be the one that's really fascinating because there's not going to be a place to hide.
Right. And one thing, too, I mean, any research firm you look at, whether it's Pew Research or Berkeley Research Center, you'll see that millennials are reluctant to self-identify as liberal or conservative.
Well, because they don't. Right. They're not. Yeah. They are not loyal to one of those. What they are loyal to is their, what I would call, their personal values. Mm-hmm. And now, those personal values, I think, run across the whole cohort, but it's almost like the undergraduate bull session where we're exploring our identity just continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you would say that too, because psychologists are arguing today that there needs to be a life stage added between adolescence and young adulthood, because millennials are putting off 7 years what previous generations did before them. So getting married, buying a home, having a child, they're putting off at least 7 years. And so psychologists are suggesting that perhaps we need to put a stage called emerging adulthood between 18 and 25 to account for that gap. And so it's fascinating. And so we're talking about generational theory here, right? Mm-hmm. But there is an argument against it called developmental theory. And what it means basically is when somebody is one, they should be walking. By two, they should be talking. By six, they shouldn't be lying in school. And by 18, graduate high school. 22, graduate college. 23, get married. 25, have a kid. And so what's fascinating is if you look at maturational theory, and some companies are saying that, and it's what they default to is to go, well, one day they're going to grow up and start thinking like us. Mm-hmm. Political parties do this, religious institutions do this, corporations do this, is that they're waiting to say one day they're going to wake up and start acting like us when they get burdened with mortgages and responsibility. But here's the deal that I have. Today, I think we're having the greatest transfer of knowledge in the history of the world. You have the largest age cohort, the baby boomer, moving out, and the millennials moving in, and X coming in, you know, behind baby boomers. We're going to have the greatest transfer of knowledge. And if companies cannot, and this is tacit knowledge, it's stuff not written down, it's stuff learned in a career, if they can't create relational connection between the generations, they're going to see that institutional knowledge walk out the door, that experience, and that is competitive advantage. It would be, it's the greatest investment any organization ever makes. That's in what their employees learn.
Well, think for a moment of, it's not just Silicon Valley, although Silicon Valley may have set the paradigm for it, but all across the country, startup companies are much more agile than the legacy companies because they are not depending upon the momentum and the knowledge cache of the older legacy companies. They, and it's not that they're trying to create all the knowledge themselves. It's they have a network of people that they draw upon. Some of these people have left legacy companies. They've left corporate America. They've gotten into the startup mode or the taking on new problem mode, and they're not letting lack of capital slow them down. They're not letting previous commitments to products and services slow them down. What they're really looking to do is find those problems that can be solved and seeing those as opportunities rather than limitations.
Right, absolutely.
And so I agree with you. It's not only we're going to see a transfer of knowledge, we're going to see a whole new source of knowledge, which is, I mean, it's very clear. A new source of financing is crowdsourcing. Right. We're going to see new knowledge coming from crowdsourcing. I mean, what we're doing right here on this radio show is we're producing content. And this content will be available to anybody in the world who Googles the keywords that we associate with this radio show.
Right.
And whenever in the history of humankind has that been possible?
Well, yeah. Access to information. For this generation, I mean, to think about it, and it's one of their Achilles' heels, I'll say, Will, as well, when they make the transition to work, is that they're the first generation who has not needed an authority figure to access information. Mm-hmm. They don't have a felt need to build relationships with authority figures, and therefore, they haven't developed the skill set really to make those connections. Now, one in five can. They're the ones that get promoted quickest. So if you're a parent of a millennial out there, you know, the one thing I would give you advice on, have them practice building relationships and connections with authority figures or people older than them and become comfortable with it because they're the ones that get noticed first. But here's what happens with millennials. really prior to work life, every authority figure in their life they perceive to be for them, there to help them develop, to grow, to get to the next level. Work may be the first place you'll ever experience an authority figure that they perceive to be antagonistic to where they want to go. And it's culture shock to them. And so as we were talking earlier before we went on the air, is people leave managers, not organizations. And so a manager who does not take an interest in a millennial, who does not have a career development plan for them, is probably not going to keep them. And like I like to say, the love language of millennials is career development.
Well, this is wonderful. And now that we've set the tone for how we can talk about millennials and gotten some insights in out onto the table, in our next section, what I want to do is talk specifically about when we talk about the problem with millennials or the opportunity with millennials is really talking about who's going to be making the most significant changes. And my bet is it's not going to be the millennials.
Okay.
So when we come back after this short break to hear from our sponsors, we're going to come back with Chip Espinosa and talk specifically about what is the role of manager, business owner, businesses themselves in helping to make this transition, helping to take on this significant difference that millennials bring to business. So this is the Pilgrim on the 405. Stick around. We'll be talking specifically to managers next.
Does your company need more than basic financial transactions? Are you holding your business back with your entry-level accounting software? When your business starts to grow, and it will, you'll need more security, features, and functionality. Well, let me introduce you to Gravity Software. Gravity Software's online accounting solution is written on the Microsoft CRM platform. No more islands of information. Financials and CRM are fully integrated and in the cloud. Gravity's goal is to fill the gap between entry-level accounting software like QuickBooks and complex and expensive enterprise applications. Gravity Software, simply innovative business management. Learn more at go-gravity.com.
Hi, it's time for more insights from Sandler Training. Here are some ideas on beating procrastination. Do what you hate first. The least enjoyable tasks should be done early when you're most energetic. For example, the buyer you'd rather not call should be at the top of your list. The accountability contract. A daily call with a friend outlines the dreaded things that you both should do that day. At the end of the day is where you talk about your accomplishments. The 24-hour rule. Do one thing toward accomplishing any new task as soon as it's assigned to you and start your follow-ups aimed at finishing that task within 24 hours. Visualize completion. Think about how great you'll feel when you get it done. The more in-depth your visualization, the quicker you'll start making it happen. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Well, here we are back with the Pilgrim on the 405 and talking to Chip Espinosa, the author of a couple of books for millennials, one on managing millennials and another on how to millennials can come to work and the kind of things that they need to be learning in terms of this transition. So we want to focus in this next segment on what can managers and business owners do to take advantage of what millennials bring, how to keep them on board, and how to get beyond this legacy of experience that just might limit the kind of communication and productivity that millennials will produce.
Well, I'd say one of the first things is when millennials, like I said earlier, are challenging the way you do things and they come in with better ideas, do not be off-put by it. Because I say this to organizations all the time. If a millennial isn't challenging your process or the ways you're doing thing, they're not engaged. They don't care. And so one of the things is, I have to tell you, what the research behind this is, the first book was United States, and the second version of the first book, I added international research to it because I had access through Microsoft, Johnson, some big multinationals. And so the original research, we looked at three managers who were effective at managing millennials, and three that were challenged. So we asked companies all over, you know, the U.S., give us three that are challenged, give us the three that are effective. And my co-authors and myself, we went through the data, we did the interview, and we saw it, and we didn't see really what was fascinating. We had a hypothesis that managers who saw millennials in a positive light would be better managers of them. That didn't turn out to be true in the data. All of the managers perceived millennials similarly. It's how they responded is what differentiated the two groups. And so, as an example, those managers that were effective, when millennials challenged them, they welcomed it. And matter of fact, if their millennials did not challenge them, they created an environment where they would have to challenge them. Whereas, you can imagine, in the challenge group of managers, they punished millennials who would challenge process and those kinds of things. And so what we learned were some competencies that made managers effective. And get a load of this too. We thought women would be better at managing millennials because of the nurturing concept. That turned out not to be true. We thought that parents of millennials may be better at managing them than the rest of the population. The opposite of that turned out true because they said, I don't mind nurturing my own kids, but I don't want to nurture anybody else's kids. Yeah, but and here's something, Will, that I thought for all of you out there in the audience who volunteer for AYSO, Little League, or church youth groups, within the effective group, there was a large number of people who volunteered in youth organizations, which is a transferable skill that is marketable in your job. And so anyway, we found out it made sense because they were comfortable with initiating a relationship with someone that was younger than them. And they really appeared to millennials as those teachers, coaches, people in their life in the past that they gravitated towards. And so as we looked at this, we also saw all the managers wanted to do a good job. In the ineffective group or the challenge group, they were doing some things right, but they didn't know what they were doing that was right. They were inconsistent in their behaviors. And so the real wealth of the information in the study was to say, here are the competencies to help you better manage and connect with millennials. So like one of them is a value of millennials is meaning in their work. If you ask them, what do you want out of work? I guarantee you, you're going to hear meaning come out of their mouth immediately. And so managers need to create meaning in the work, in the jobs, connect it for the millennials, help them understand how their contribution impacts the greater good of the organization. Show them the big picture was another one. So millennials come in with a lack of experience for the most part, and so they're somewhat perceived as myopic, and they can't see cause and effect two or three steps down from their own work. And so sometimes they don't understand how they could be complicating a system by what they're doing. So those managers need to take them and paint the big picture. Show them the big picture. Connect the dots for them. Help them to do, you know, cause and effect types of thinking. And those little skills create not only awareness and knowledge for that millennial, for the, they feel like they're growing and moving forward, but it really helps to build the relationship with the manager. And perhaps the biggest skill that it's all based on is really build a relationship. Take an interest in that millennial. In that effective group of managers, they saw themselves as key to the success of the millennial's career. The ineffective saw millennials as an impediment to their own success. And so really, you boil it down to that. You say, I'm here to help you. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? I'm here to help you, but you got to commit to it.
Well, one of the things that we do in our management program at Sandler Training is we, you know, managers come to us initially. They generally come to us with the question, teach me, how do I get my people to do what I want them to do?
Right.
And the big transformation for them, even before we thought about millennials, the big transformation is to help them recognize you can't get anybody to do what they don't want to do.
Right.
And so your real task as a manager is to, number one, find out what your people want individually. What is their goal? Not just tomorrow, but 5 years from now, 3 years from now. What do they want? And then to help them connect that with what the opportunities are at work. and then to help them be the best they can possibly be in that. That transformation in managers makes huge differences in the population, and now I can begin to see how that's going to even make a more significant contribution to this management of millennials, because my assumption is that, at least my experience with millennials is, in coming in, they really don't have a clear picture of what they want long term,
right?
Because that's not something they've had to develop. But as a manager, if I can help them lay that out and help them to understand that things don't happen unless we want them to, we create the future. And so helping them to get clear about what kind of future they want personally, as well as corporately, that helping them to see that, and then helping them to see the steps that go about making that happen, that really empowers people. And if a manager becomes that kind of coach,
right,
as well as that kind of accountability partner, then they've made a huge contribution to that millennial, and the chances they're going to leave that organization are much smaller.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, too, in many organizations I work in, is millennials want to advance. And so let's face it, there's not enough, you know, middle management or that senior level management positions for every millennial that wants to be there. But what you can do is commit to say, I'm going to develop your skill set. And you're going to have a transferable skill set that's going to build your career, and you're going to be able to go wherever you want to go. Even though you may not have the position you can push them into, you can still develop their skill set. And of course, you know the old adage, right, of why would we want to train our people? Because then they're going to leave us. And so you're like, okay, you want people who are untrained. That just makes no sense whatsoever. But yeah, absolutely. That manager making the adaptation and developing. Now, here's an interesting thing about millennials. And my third book was Millennials Who Manage. So you can imagine the iteration of this, right? First, I write on managing the millennials, and I'm getting asked questions. Well, what do they need to do to adapt to make the transition? And then I start getting asked questions by managers who were millennials saying, how do I manage older people? Here are two real difficult transition points that if you're coaching a young person who's moving into management, and it's the transition, and it's the change in dynamics of relationship. So number one, with their peers, when they get promoted, all of a sudden they get ostracized by their peers, and it's a lonely season for them. All of a sudden they are one of the crowd, one of the in-group, and now they're an outsider. I had this young woman who's a manager say that my friend since junior high unfriended me on Facebook when I became her manager.
You've joined the dark side.
Exactly. In other words, you're snooping on my life, and I don't want that. The other, and so the reaction that millennials have sometimes is they're more harsh on their own generation as managers than other generations, as this backlash to, why are you so immature? Why are you acting this way? You're giving us all a bad name. And I say to millennials, you got to refrain from doing that, because you'll lose credibility within your own generation, ultimately other generations. The other danger is to flip to the other side and be lenient and try to be friendly and do everything you can to bring that relationship back together. And so then you're not holding people accountable. The other dynamic in relationship that changes is with the person that promoted you. The fear of disappointing them. So millennial managers many times will live with their manager on one shoulder and their own intuition on the other shoulder. And there'll be this dialogue, this tension between the two voices. And ultimately, you have to use your own voice or you'll lose authenticity. And so the key is to be able to listen to that voice, because, and what I say to millennials, it's inevitable. The day is coming where you're going to disappoint the person that promoted you, because you're not that person. So if you look at that transition, what's complicating for millennials, two things in addition: ambiguity. Management's about ambiguity. Ambiguity is millennial kryptonite. So when they're coming in as a manager, you want to be as detailed oriented as you can, because they feel if you're not giving them good information and step-by-step information, that you're trying to sabotage them or cause them to fail. So they need high direction, but autonomy, you getting out of their way. So that's huge for them. And like my daughter one time came this year, she's 15, she's that borderline. She was going to UCLA soccer camp, and she had to write a 2-paragraph letter of why she wanted to go. So I said, Charlie, I said, write me 2 paragraphs on why you want to go to soccer camp. She goes, how many sentences each paragraph? And I just started laughing because this is the stuff I study. I'm like going, I don't care how many sentences, however many it takes.
But she cared.
She cared because she wanted to do it right. And so millennials, you think in transitioning into management, if you're always wanting to do things right and guaranteed you're going to get it right, you're probably going to be reluctant to make decisions, which gives me another point, okay, is that millennials will make decision by indecision. They put so much pressure on themselves to make the right decision that many times they'll default into a decision simply because of that.
I know one of the things that you mentioned in the book was the notion of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that seems to me to be a significant change for a manager, to be flexible in terms of how they relate to other people, especially the people they're managing. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, what I heard over and over in the interview process was, I can't believe it. I worked my whole career, because you know, the way that you and I had upward mobility early on in our careers was to find somebody that had the authority and we sucked up to them. We did everything they didn't want to do and, you know, told them how great they were. And so now all of a sudden these managers that spent a career doing that, now they're on top of the structure and I'm standing up in front of them telling them they need to adapt and change for the millennials. They're like going, what just happened? I made it to the top and now you're telling me I'm still going to have to be the one who adapts. And so there's this real, I'll say, resentment out there to say that why do we have to adapt to them? And I'm saying it's not really about the millennials. It's sociology. You look at the baby boomer. It was almost 80 million strong in the U.S. Millennials are over 80 million as a generation. You know, Gen X was in between. Smaller generation. They really tried to move the needle in the workplace on several things, but they got the smackdown from the baby boomer, who said, that's not how we do things. We set the agenda. We make the rules. We're the dominant group. Well, what's happened is that that has shifted to the millennials now, who are the dominant group because of their size. Now, they don't have all the power yet in organizations, but it's a matter of time before that shifts as well. And so that's why you're seeing this mainly up until now. Most of the tension's been between that baby boomer and the millennial. And it's simply because, if you think about it, it's just two dominant groups vying for the agenda of the organization. Now, the tension's growing with Gen X because Gen X has patiently waited. And what they're seeing now is millennials are being promoted to equal or greater positions of what they have with 10 to 15 years less experience.
Well, one of the things that's fascinating to me is I've been working for the past year with a group called the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And essentially what this does is it helps that basically baby boomer mentality, where it's a very owner-centric business, and the owner is there making all the decisions, other people coming in asking him or her, what do I do next? And now that will work for a certain size company, and as these companies become successful and grow, then that puts a lot of pressure on that owner trying to make all these decisions. And by the way, the people who he's attracted, hired, and retained are people who are not going to be expert in their particular areas. And as the business grows, you need to have those experts. And so what the Entrepreneurial Operating System has been doing, which I just found fascinating, is to help that become much more collaborative and not just coach the manager or the owner, but to begin to develop, to teach a system for how this business operates, which includes accountability, a clear vision of where we're going, expecting that we're going to follow a pattern of meetings, that we wind up solving problems, not just talking about them. And that, to me, is an excellent place for millennials to come in and move beyond that Gen X group.
Absolutely. And so when people ask me, me, you know, tell us what's operational out there. Who's doing it? Well, those are the kinds of environments that are doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen the difference. Bringing in a company, one company I'm working with right now has a 35-year-old president who took over because his father had too much pressure and went wacko. And now this new president says, I don't want to get into that place where he was, working 90 hours a week with all these decisions to be made about things that I don't know about. So I'm going to be looking to these other people to begin to make their skills better to take responsibility for these particular areas. They're responding. And they're responding by going to class, by joining associations, and finding out what they need to do to run this, you know, this multi-million-dollar organization that's very prominent in its field. But it's almost as if you've taken the lid off of personal development for these people, and they're responding to it. And most of them are millennials.
Yeah, absolutely. And in Millennials Who Manage, we did a quantitative survey of the different age cohorts in management. And the generation that scored the highest in empowerment, and it's what you're talking about right now in this 35-year-old executive example, scored the highest in empowerment, the millennial generation. It's because they get it intuitively, mm-hmm. is to say, you know, I don't want that kind of responsibility. I don't want to work 90 hours a week. And here, I got to tell you, the other day I'm in a cab, and I was in, I think it was Denver, but I was talking on the plane on the way to this guy that his son said, Dad, he was graduating from college, and he was going to see him in Denver. He says, Dad, I only want to work 30 hours a week. And the dad said, you've got to be kidding me. You know, I've just spent all this money and got you this, and you only want to work 30 hours a week. And he goes, Dad, how many hours do you work a week? He goes, probably 25. And he goes, yeah, you own your own business. You do. He says, but son, I worked 80-hour weeks up until the time I was 40, 45 years old. Well, his son was born late in life. He never saw his dad when he was working. All he saw him was working the 24 hours. So I got to tell all of your listeners out there that when they see us today in what we work and what we're doing, because we're leveraging, maximizing what we're doing, is they think that they can do that at 25, 27, 28. And that's a little bit of a disconnect.
Well, I think one of the pieces that's really important, working with some people, we're putting on a workshop in October, and what we're focusing on is that group of business owners who 4 or 5 years from now want to make a transition. All right, they're 60, late 50s, 60, and they're going to be making a transition. They want to have the highest value on their business. Now, in order to do that, what they have to have is they have to have systems that work. They have to have data that's there, processes, and they have to have people who are competent in each of the areas, because when that business owner makes that exit, he can't be taking all of his knowledge with him. He can't be taking all of the sales relationships with him. All of that has to be transferred then.
Right.
And that whole notion of who am I going to do this with means that the kind of things we've been talking about that managers need to be thinking about in terms of millennials, that's the process that's going to happen in that 5-year period. And you know, that's one group that we believe is going to be find this very helpful. But the second group is that group of millennials right now who took over 2 or 3 years ago from their parents, and they may have not come up with an operating system that moves them beyond seeing the kind of owner-centric mentality, right, that was such a limitation on the company and the development of other people. So those are the two areas where we see the greatest need right now, and the place where we can make a big impact on businesses, and through impacting businesses, impact employees and the social sphere.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think there's a huge emerging market in the transfer of family businesses with respect to this generational stuff, is because, you know, the values and attitudes may be very different of that first generation that started the business and how they would run it, and it's creating all kinds of tension.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen businesses over and over that 40 years ago got started, and the genius who came up with the product or service that was unique said, I don't want it to grow any bigger than this because I'm not a businessman. This is all I can handle. And then inevitably, when the second generation comes in, they see the opportunity to make it larger. But if they don't change the operating system, all that pressure is going to come on to them.
Right.
And some of the ways they deal with that is internalizing it. Another way is to simply say, well, I don't deal with sales. Whatever they do. As long as they're successful, just keep on doing it. But there's no process there. And you can say the same thing about the manufacturing or the finance. But all of those pieces, we either take it on internally and lots of pressure, or we isolate from it. And so an operating system that's really going to bring people into accountability and in a place where they can collaborate and have a joint vision for where they're taking it, that's where I see the real challenge is going to be in the next 10 years.
Yep, absolutely.
And so I think the millennials play a huge part in that because they're bringing with them, they're bringing the kind of collaborative communication, they're bringing with them the willingness to be accountable to people who have a relationship with them, and that global mentality that we are more than just a region or even a country. We are a global movement, and we're looking for how we can make our contribution. So I think it's going to be very exciting. I was at the Rotary Club this morning, one of the older members said to me under his breath, he said, well, I'm really concerned about the world my grandkids are going to be in. Well, I think he should be for himself because it's going to be very, very different.
Right.
But it was very exciting to hear the speaker at the Rotary Club today from one of the real strong programs in Orange County. It's High School Inc. And the speaker there was talking about all these things they're doing with kids in Santa Ana, where 8 years ago the graduation level was 50% at Valley View High School. And because of the work these people have been doing, and they're millennials, the work they've been doing, they've moved it to 90% plus.
Wow.
And they're very collaborative, very much involved with helping to empower people and to help them move forward. And they're making these bridges between the high school kids and businesses. Fascinating. And so, you know, it is going to be very, very different, but it's going to be very, very good.
Well, I agree. And I think in many ways of what baby boomers and Gen X has tried to do in the workplace, I think millennials may pull it off. Mm-hmm. You know, one is I know that things like annual reviews are going by the wayside because they're just not effective. They're not, many times they're not fair. Right. They need
weekly
to be more frequent and,
yes,
and more rich in feedback. So I think we're going to see a lot about the organization. And we spoke earlier of the human side of the organization. I think it's going to continue to move that direction in a very positive way. And I think they're actually going to come up with metrics for productivity other than whether somebody punches a time clock or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, the way that I came across you, Chip, was through my relationship with the Boy Scouts, because they were so impressed with your presentation to their staff and to their board. If others want to talk to you or want to access the work that you've done with books, tell us a little bit about what they can do, how they can find you, or how they can read the material you've presented.
Well, thanks, Will. You're a good salesman. This is where I'm weak, but go to www.chipespinoza.com. And you can contact me through my website. You can see some of my work from the consulting side, as well as what I've written and some publications that are out there, interviews. Also, Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. You can find Managing the Millennials, Millennials at Work, and Millennials Who Manage. And if you're out there, and we've got it covered, basically, if you're managing millennials, great book, Managing the Millennials. If you have somebody that's transitioning into work, that book's about the challenges they're going to face and what they can do about it. So you might want to get that for somebody you're coaching or mentoring. And then Millennials Who Manage is for that person that is taking that early management career position, saying, how do I manage people older than me? How do I manage my peers? And how do I develop as a leader?
Well, and one of the things that I would encourage our listeners to do is I found Chip very, very accessible. And so if you have questions about this, email him. Get on his website, www.chipespinoza.com, and communicate with him. Ask him to come out and talk with you. Develop that relationship. Chip is a deep fund of research and creative ideas about how to help millennials make this transition, how to help current managers make the most of the productivity and creativity that millennials bring to the workplace. So it's been a real pleasure, Chip. Thank you very much for making your way over to the studio this morning to talk with us, and I look forward to more conversations as we move forward.
Thanks, Will. Great
to
be with you.
This has been the Pilgrim on the 405 with Chip Espinosa talking about millennials in the workplace. And so what we want you to do is get out there and make business in California thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.